Morning, Rabbi Sai. Our limud of halacha every day is as a schus for the refuah of Yosef Dov Ben Chayla, shtav refuah shleim b'kor b'sach shechali Yisrael.
Amen.
So just continuing our discussion on the interesting minhogim that surround Pesach Sheni, which is tomorrow Monday. Yes, you were right that we do say tachnun this afternoon l'chol alma. Everybody says tachnun, even those who don't say tachnun tomorrow, do say tachnun this afternoon. In monks, they have a very interesting minhag that they do say tachnun in the morning and they don't say tachnun in the afternoon. Exactly why that is, I don't know, but I'll call upon him. But we brought down.
Korban was eaten in the afternoon.
What?
Korban was eaten in the afternoon.
Because the korban was eaten in the afternoon. It was shechted in the afternoon, prepared in the afternoon, it was eaten in the evening. Yeah, on Leil Tesvov. But I'll call upon him, yeah, if the Shechita was in the afternoon, then maybe the morning isn't Yom Tov, so to speak, yet. Okay, so that's as far as that's concerned. Now, we brought down that there are some people who have a minhag that they don't say Tachnun the whole of the 14th, and they don't say Tachnun on the 15th either. And then, because the night of the Korban was the 15th, the night of the 15th was when you ate the Korban, therefore it's already a Yom Tov, because part of the day is the Achila of the Korban Pesach.
Don't say
Oh, we were going to say that the Hasidim don't say for a whole week. There are some. It's brought down. The minig's brought down here that there was a minig in many places that for 7 days after from Pesach Sheni for a whole week they didn't say Tachnun. There's a machlokes. He brings down in the notes at the bottom of Pisgei Chuvas a machlokes what the minig in Sanz was. There were two versions of what the Divrei Chaim used to do, and in the end they say that the more reliable of the two versions is probably that he didn't say Tachnun for the whole of the 7 days. And Rabbi Yosef Engel brings down a little bit of a remes. He says a sefer imi Yoshe the Marash. Sorry, Shlomo Kluger. Not Rabbi Yosef Engel, brings a smach to the minig al pi akosav in Parshas Baloischo. It says that when the Bnei Yisrael were in the Midbar they brought the Korban Pesach in Mitzrayim, and then the first year that they brought the Pesach Sheni, they brought the Pesach Sheni for those who were Tameim, etc., etc., and therefore they brought the Pesach Sheni on Yud Dalet, and it says that by he that the Nala Ha'onon, that the Onon lifted on the 20th of, it says V'eshim Lachoidesh, B'choidesh Hasheni, V'eshim Lachoidesh, Nala Ha'onon, which means that they got instructions to move on, to continue moving, to move from one place to the other, only on the 20th. It says, why on the 20th? Why not any time earlier? Because from Pesach Yudalad, from Pesach Sheni, from the Yudalad, for 7 days, were 7 days of Simcha, and that's why we don't say Tachnun, for those people who don't, over the 7 days, and therefore the Onon, so to speak, waited, HaKadosh Baruch Hu waited, for them to travel until the Yimei Simcha were over, and then they could travel. Finally, very interesting, we already had this shailas brought down in a few places about those people who have a minhag to eat matzo, we understand. Those people who eat mora, we understand as well. Zecha le Pesach, Zecha le mora of Pesach. Those people who eat an egg, Beit HaMugushal is brought down. I'm not quite sure exactly what the reason for that is, because on the night of Pesach we do it. It's Biani Barroim, it's Biani Hirvani Lano, it's to do with Yom Kippur, to do with Tisha B'Av. I'm not sure exactly why they eat Beit HaMugushal as well, maybe to the Secha, to the Chagiga that came with the Korban Pesach, but I didn't know whether or not they didn't bring a Chagiga with the Korban Pesach Sheni, I guess. I don't know. So I'm not sure exactly what the idea is. And finally, it says here, Tzorech Lizoy, brings down again Poskim, Tzorech Lizoy, Loi Loima, not to say, Boso Ze Lepesach Sheni. And he says that some people have a minig even not to eat Tzli on the night, on the 15th, that means tomorrow night, Monday night, not to eat roasted meat on Matzah Shab, on Pesach Sheni, on the Matzah on the night of the Tetzvav, because in the same way that we don't do it on the night of Pesach, so we don't do it on the night of Pesach Sheni either. So V'yesha Omrim, he brings down from the Chazon Avadia, from Avadi Yosef, he says, She'ein l'achme elo b'gdi sholem tzolui k'dugmas ha'korban Pesach. If you're going to eat an entire gedi, which is roasted, that will be a problem. But otherwise, he says that there isn't a problem eating meat or roasted meat on the night of Pesach Sheni, night after Pesach Sheni. Says Walter.
Started at the Torahway, Northwest London, Sunday, Yud Gimel Iyar, 28th day of the Omer, 11th of May, Reina Rav Ramosha B'Tzal of Rosnath, Shlita, The Perils of Power.
And the games of names.
This week's story is sponsored by Nishmas Moras Chai, Sorah Bas Rav Yitzchok, Isaac Miller Hashalom, Leskus Hashavun Vahayolim, Bamil Chomo Shiachru Votem, Leshalom Bin Heiro.
Amen. Good morning, everyone. First of all, I can tell you that my father misses coming here, so I'll tell him, Blineda, today, that I was here, and I'm sure he'll be very happy. He misses his Oilem, and he misses his bit in the Torah weights. There's a Shema here, Rapport Shalema, and come back to join you all. Yeah, this is what I mean, yeah. So, okay. Now, talking about Pesach Sheni, so, what was it you mentioned, Mishver, again? The egg, yeah. Talking about Pesach Sheni. So Pesach Sheni was relevant to last week's Sedra a little bit, because not of our views dying. The discussion is who were the people that were not able to come at Pesach Rishon. So the Gemara in Sukkah Chof Hei gives three different options. Either those that were carrying Arona Shel Yosef, or those that took out Nodav Aviyu, Mishol Vel Tzofon. The Gemara refutes this because they had enough time, both these groups, to become Toyer. Because, let's say, Nodav Aviyu was on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, right? On the day of the inauguration. And they died. And Mishol Vatzofen took them out. The Porah they had, I think, by the 2nd of Nisan. So why couldn't they get Torah before Pesach? Therefore, the Gemara says it was a different group that were busy with the Meis Mitzvah. And they finished their 7 days exactly on Erev Pesach. And therefore, they weren't yet Torah to make the Korban Pesach. Say again? Yeah, they were encamped already. So they didn't need to hold him. They can put him in a tent. And therefore, they had time to be Torah. So, regarding the egg, why they would have it, the Mishmaru says in Hilchos Pesach that one of the reasons for the egg is not just because Pesach lands on the day Tisha B'Av lands, it's because of the Churban, that we Pashut can't bring the Korban. So therefore that would be relevant to Pesach Sheni as well, which, by the way, lends into another question. If Mashiach comes now, would we bring the Korban of Pesach Sheni? Or is it only for someone that was viable to bring it on Pesach Rishon, with the Beis HaMikdash being there, and he couldn't bring it on Pesach Rishon, he brings it on Pesach Sheni? That's a shaila they have. Although many will tell you that on Pesach Rishon you could have also brought a Korban. That's a big controversy, that the Korban Pesach can maybe be brought Bizman Hazer. That's already, we shouldn't go down. Yeah, so, go
down
on
the Mashiach, we should know.
Yeah. Okay. Right, so... Oh, yeah, so... So it's like this. I'd like to discuss a little bit regarding Kohenim Gedolim. You see, Nodav Aviyu, they died bringing a Ketores. They weren't the only people to die in the Beis HaMikdash. In fact, we all know, the Mishnah says, that a Kohen Gadol, when he's finished Avodah on Yom Kippur, he makes a tefillah. Once he's gone out the Kodesh Kedosh, he makes a tefillah. He has to hurry the tefillah. Why? After all this opportunity, finally on the Madrega to daven to Hashem for Klal Yisrael, he davens tefillahs for the Hatzlocha, he davens that those going home from the Beis HaMikdash, Hashem, don't listen to their tefillah. They're going to daven it shouldn't rain, because they don't want to get stuck in the rain. Make it rain. Right? And all different tefillahs. He has to hurry. Why? So it says because otherwise people are going to be scared. They're going to be scared that maybe he died in the Kodesh Kedoshim, that's why he hasn't come out. There was this whole trepidation. Did the Kohen succeed, or did he not succeed? And they were worried. So he had to hurry the tefillah, come out, Baruch Hashem, Yotze B'Sholem. So that's a Mishnah in Yuma, Nun Beis Amar Beis. And the Rambam explains that many Kohenim Gedolim used to die in the Kodesh Kedoshim because either they were not worthy of being Kohen Gadol, or they didn't do the Avodah correctly. Maybe they did it like the Tzedokim. They put the coals with the fire before they entered the Kodesh Kedoshim, but they would die. Now, how many Kohenim Gedolim do you think disappeared over Yom Kippur? So the Gemara in Yom Daf Tes tells us that in the first Beis HaMikdash, there were 18, and Tos suggests actually only 8, Koinim Gedolim, over a span of 410 years. The take of Tosus, if I remember correctly, is 8 Koinim Gedolim. If we mention more, we're talking about Skam Koinim Gedolim. But actual practicing Koinim Gedolim, only 8. Second Beis HaMikdash, stark contrast. Second Beis HaMikdash, about 100 and something years, were a few famous good Koinim Gedolim. And then, in less than 300 years, there were more than 300 Kohenim Gedolim. That means, by the way, not each Kohen Gadol had the merit to drop dead in the Kodesh Kedoshim. Some just died beforehand. What's going on? The answer is, these were not worthy Kohenim Gedolim. These were people that paid their way into the job. And therefore, since they were corrupt, again, I'm not saying they were all terrible people. The Gemara does call them Rishoyim, but it's unclear if they were all literally Rishoyim. But they had to really work hard to not die on Yom Kippur. And therefore, we find in the Mishnah that when they interrogate the Kohen, they tell him, Shem Eloi Lomadato, maybe you never learned, we'll teach you how to do the Avodah. Wouldn't it be a Kohen Gadol doesn't have to do the Avodah? The answer is yes. They paid their way into it, and if it could be, there was a Kohen Gadol that didn't know how to do the Avodah. There's a room where they used to put them in. It's called the Lishchas Fahedrin or Flahedrin. What was this room? What does it mean, Fahedrin? So the Gemara says it means ministers of the king. What is that implying? It's a warning. It used to be called something else. When the Kohenim Gedolim were good people, it was called Lishchas Levotin. It became Lishchas Farhedrin, which means the ministers of the king, which means, just like ministers of the king change the whole time, you know, the whip gets taken away, etc., and you get another one. So to you, if you don't behave, we'll just move on to the next Kohen Gadol, you'll die in the Kodesh Kedoshim, and we'll move on to the next Kohen Gadol. Tiferes Yisrael says even more. He says, Farhedrin means tax ministers. A tax minister you don't keep for more than a year. Because once he becomes Haimish with the Olam, then he already takes his cuts. So you need to move on to the next minister. So too, you know, you bought your way in, and if you get too Haimish here, we'll move on to the next Kohen Gadol. That's it's a warning. The name of this room is a warning bell for the Kohen Gadol. And something that intrigues me, and if anyone has an explanation, I'd love to hear. I don't really have an explanation. There's one explanation that we all know, but, you know, a real rational explanation I don't have. Why on earth did these people want to be Kohenim Gedolim? They're dropping dead year by year. And the answer you're going to say is power, covered, maybe even schus, because it's a weird one. Kohen Gadol, to do that, it's like there's a lot of spirituality involved here. Yeah, he was a leader of Klal, but ultimately he was doing that Avodah. He was trying. He was going inside the Kohen Gadolim. It's strange. It's terribly strange, and yeah, it's not. I mean, you know, we saw someone shot in the ear not long ago. I mean, it was heading somewhere else, but it went into his ear, and yet people go for such positions, right? Even though they know they're under the threat of death. But when it's so evident, year by year, where everyone thought, I'm the tzaddik, I'm going to be the one, it baffles me a little bit. So anyone has an explanation, please let me know, because we're still a bit stuck on this. So that's relevant to the perils of power.
The covered,
I get it, but still, when it's so apparent. Yeah, that's the best answer for now. But if someone has something even more, I'd like to hear. Okay, moving.
The Baltimore in the Mishnah says,
yeah,
that the Kohanim, not the Kohen Gadol, the Kohanim died early for two reasons: that they ate a lot of fatty meat, and because they had their feet on the stone.
Very interesting that you say that. I hear that. Well, the Rabbeinu B'chai al Torah says there was a ness by the Kohanim Gadolim that they never got ill, even though they ate a lot of fatty meat, and their legs were in the blood the whole time, and they should have got colds and illnesses from the food. They never did. I once gave a long time ago, I gave a shiur about this. I had a pshat. I'll tell you what it was. It's just mamash agav. The Gemara in Shabbos says that you know, there's halacha 3 days before Matan Torah you have to separate from a woman. And the reason is the male, you know, he can go to mikveh for his keri. But the woman, it takes 3 days for the zera to be masriach. And therefore she's like also peleta shechva zera, we don't have to have a tumah. And the Gemara says, the Gemara discusses, does it really take 3 days or not for a zera to die? It says, Bishlema goy eats shkotzim or amosim, it eats sharp things, and those sharp things burn out things in the body. So it takes 3 days. But a yid doesn't eat, you know, oysters and lobsters and all these sort of things. And therefore, what's going to burn out the body? The zera, yeah, at the same date line as a goy. Moro, yeah. But they were just before, it's just before, but it was, yeah, I hear, okay, good, fine. So the Maisa, the Gemara says, I did a daigi b'mitzvahs, because Jewish people are, before a Yom Tov, they're busy and they're stressed and they're excited and they're all into their mitzvah, that is also burning in the body. It's going to be a, yeah, you know, so you don't need, your people sometimes go to, you know, go for help because they're too anxious and, true, sometimes, but some of the things is part of being a yid, part of the anxiety of chometz, and a little bit with measure is part of being a yid, and that burns away the zera. That's what the Gemara says. So I once want to suggest, I don't remember properly, it was a long time ago, that regarding the kohenim, they were the most daiki b'mitzvahs. Kohenim's rizim, they're busy in the kodesh, they're busy doing the avodah, and you know, and therefore they didn't have, you know, this burnt away the fatty foods, and also didn't allow them to catch a cold because they were on fire. That's a drush. Now coming back to our topic, so that's one name discussed. The perils of power has been discussed. Anyone has another answer? With pleasure. Then one name has been discussed, the Lishchas Frahedrin, was a warning bell to the Kohenim Gedolim, behave yourself, otherwise we're just changing ministers. There's another room in the Beis HaMikdash, I think I've mentioned this here before, on a different shir, but this is, we're heading to something new that I have not discussed here before. There was a room called the Beis HaParva. The Beis HaParva was a mikveh, was on the upper floor. It was a mikveh where the Kohen Gadol used to tovel on Yom Kippur. And the question is, why is it called Beis HaParva? It's nothing to do with Meteor Milky, I'm telling you. So why is it called Beis HaParva? So the Gemara says there was an Amgusha called Parva, and he built, or this place is named after him. Amgusha means a wizard. A wizard. And this place was named after him. Now the question is, Shem Roshoim Yurkav. We make the name of Rosha disappear. We don't try and make it continue on. Why on earth is there a room in the Beis HaMikdash called after a wizard, which is an Issa D'Raisa, who we kill? Doesn't make sense? So Tosfos says, and if I remember correctly, Tosfos says, there's halacha, you know, you're not allowed to be where the Kohen Gadol is doing the avodah on Yom Kippur. No one's allowed. Even Malochim, even Shadim, that's what there's a discussion. One of the Kohen Gadolim came out and a Malach or Shin Dalad basically killed him. And the question is, even a Shin Dalad's not meant to be there. The Gemara asks, even a Shin Dalad's not meant to be there, Bizman the avodah. No one could be there. This chap called Parva decided to tunnel his way under to watch the Kohen Gadol. He wanted. And the Kohenim smelled it out, they found him and they banged him over the head till he died. And they named the room in the Beis HaMikdash after him as a warning bell. Never do it again. No one should follow Parva's idea. So therefore, again, now he may have been a wizard. He may have been Agav, a wizard. But they called it after because it was a Te'eles Ruchni. So that no one ever, you know, like, it's a Shem Roshoim Yirkav, see what happened to him. That's one pshat. There is another pshat I once saw, I can't remember where. I thought it was a Tiferes Yisrael, and I don't know if I even understand it properly, because a mikveh mustn't go through pipes and kelim, etc. But there is a pshat that this mikveh was on the upper floor, and in those days, to bring water from down to up was a massive chiddush. Like, what piping system did you, what pump did you have? And he did it somehow through the walls, if I remember this pshat correctly. So everyone that met this builder said, wow, your mum is a wizard. Not that he was literally a wizard, but he did such a remarkable thing for those days. They said, wow, your mamash a wizard. So it wasn't a wizard of Issa, and therefore they could name this room after him. Now here we come to, so that's another name, the Beis HaParva. Okay. There is a Chasam Sofer regarding names who says a fascinating thing. He says, that it was never such a thing as two names by Yidi. Double name. Now, everyone, whenever I say this, ask straight away, what do you mean? Yisrael had 10 names, Moshe had names, Yaakov had two names, Yaakov and Yisrael. Yeah, but not Yaakov Yisrael or Yisrael Yaakov. He was sometimes Yisrael, he was sometimes Yaakov. Moshe was sometimes Moshe, sometimes Tuvia. Yisrael was sometimes this, sometimes everything corresponded to a different event. He was never a double-barreled name. And obviously, if you say such a statement, you have to go through the whole of Nach, and you have to go through the whole Gemara, and you're going to get stuck on various things, which we'll discuss some of the things, and obviously not everyone's going to agree with this Chasam Sofer. But just an interesting story he brings. This is like, in a way, the weakest of Raya's, but it's intriguing. He brings a Yamshel Shleima in Meseches Gittin. Perik Dalet Simchov Vov. There was a dispute between husband and wife how to name a baby. Now we know there's Minhogim, you know, who comes first with the baby's name. I even saw in a Sefer last week I can't remember properly, but if the baby is born very close to Shabbos, so there are many Amakbet to try and give the baby a name, we're talking about a girl, by Shabbos, but there were communities that Dafka didn't, because in those communities, the minig was to then, everyone would go past the mother to wish Mazel Tov, and she just had birth, and she needs kochus to recuperate, so they'd give her another week. So that's also something important, sometimes people forget, that someone that gave birth needs time, and shouldn't be straight away doing all the work at home. This halacha recognizes it, not to call the name straight away, because then the whole community is going to say Mazel Tov, and she doesn't have the kochus yet for the Mazel Tov. There was such a minig. I don't think it's a done minig. I think people do try and rush to give the name by Shabbos, but it just shows a certain recognition of a person needs to heal. But either way, there was a dispute between this couple. The man wanted to call the baby Meir, and the woman wants to call the baby Yoir. What do you do? So they came up with a pshara, a new name that had never been before. Shneor. And that's, Shneor, it's a kinu of Zalman, but that's where this name was born. It was born out of a dispute between husband and wife. They came up with a pshara, Shneor, two lights, Meir and Yoir. The two lights, Meir and Yoir. Ask Chasam Sofer, why didn't he just call him Meir Yoir? The answer is, in those days, there was no such thing as a double name. Therefore, it wasn't an option. And therefore, they chose Shnei'or, which resembles the two lights. Now, the Chasam Sofer goes through a few cases that he gets stuck on. For instance, the Gemara in Yevamos Kufchof Beis on the base brings someone called Yochanan Ben Yonason Arya. That's a double name, Yonason Arya. So he says, no. Arya is like a surname describing how strong this family was. He says his father was also called Arya. Strong like a lion, but his name was Yonason. Then he comes against probably the most famous one you'll find in the Gemara, Abba. You've got loads of Abbas. Abba Guria, Abba Yudan, lots of Abbas. So what do you do about that? So he says that's just a title of covet. Abba Yudan, the leader of the Jews, something like that. As an aside, there was someone whose name was actually Abba in the Gemara. Anyone know? Someone whose Shema Etzem was Abba. Rav, the Shema Gedolim brings, lived for 400 years, coming towards Lag BaOmer. He was of the Chevraya of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, and he was also all the way to the Amoraim. So in the Gemara, often when there's a dispute between Rav and Tanoim, it tries to answer, but if it's stuck, it says Rav, Tanahu Upalig. Rav has the koyach of a Tana, because he's also from the Imei HaTanoim. And his Shema Etzem, his real name, was Abba. And you have it in the famous Gemara in Yuma, where Rav was going to tell the butcher to ask him Mechila, and Rav Huna says, Abba's going to kill someone, because the butcher will not ask for Mechila. That was his name. His name was Abba. And the Chidon Shema Gdoyle Merechitz Aleph has a Shaila, if Abba's son says, Abba, can you please take me to... Is he allowed to say Abba? He means my father, but his name is Abba. Can he say Abba? And the Chido seems to say he can't. You'll have to say Tati, Daddy, whatever, in such a case, according to the Shema Gedolim. So the Shema Gedolim then steps into another Shaila, and that is, can you call your father if you put a Toya covered in front of your father's name? Meaning, if you say Rebbe, and then you say your father's name. Now, to your father, you know, there's no need for that. Maybe it's disrespectful. But when someone asks you, this is very, very shkiyah. People ask, what's your father's name? So, we grew up, you don't say. But Lamaisa, people say, Rebbe Ploin. So, it's like this. The Marshal is machme on this. He says, when it comes to your Rebbe, you can say Rebbe Ploini. Because otherwise, who is it going to be? There's 1,000 different Rebbes it could be. Someone asks, who's your Rebbe? So you say Rebbe Ploini. But when you want to talk about your father, just say Ovi. There's only one person to find out who it is. So normally they know who. Just say Ovi. Ovi Moiri. Yeah.
When the Gabba asks you...
I'm going to get to that. Yeah, okay. We're going to get to Ali of a father, even, yeah. If there's time.
Yeah.
We're going to have to rush a bit. But now, if it's unexplainable without saying the name, right? So then it's like a Rebbe. Then you get the same heter. So, you know, the Gabba needs to know for an Aliyah how to call you up. Then you say Rebbe Ploini. There are some that want to say maybe you should be Machmir and say letter by letter. Yud, Ayin, Kuf, Beis, right? And, you know, that leads into the Lashem Yichud controversy. Yud and K and Vov and the Noid Yichud are very wild about Lashem Yichud because you're saying the Yud K, Vov K. What do you mean? I'm saying letter by letter. No, that's like saying it. So that's a bit of that shaila. But either way, that would be understandable that whenever you need to, then you do a toya covered in front, and that would allow for such a thing. Now, I don't think so, because ultimately in halacha, what he's called sometimes has even more weight than what he's not called by. Right, so let's say his English name is called by every day, and then you want to say that because it's not a real name. It is a real name, like, you know, in Hilchus Gittin, for instance, it will be there. Hamachuna. Yeah. So no, I don't think it makes a difference. Now, in the Shailas Teshuvas Mishnah Halachas from Rav Menashe Klein, in Chelek Hei Siman Reish Tesvov, he brings this Chasam Sofer. And he disputes it, he goes across Nach and Gomorrah, where there's loads of double names. I myself came across the Tosfos, where there's someone called Yaakov Yisrael. So, he disputes it, many, many riyas. But what caught me as intriguing again, was the Shneur case. He brings this story, again, it's the least of the proofs, it's just a story. But he brings this story of the parents that had a machloikas to call the child Meir, or to call the child Yoir. And they chose Shneor. Why didn't they just do a double name? Meir Yoir. Says Rav Menashe Klein, because it won't solve the dispute. Because he'll want Meir Yoir, and she'll want Yoir Meir, because you know always the first name is the catchy one. Or if you're going to choose the second name to be the catchy one, then the opposite way around. But it didn't help the dispute, because whichever one you put in the right position is still going to be the one. Therefore, it's almost like Shlomo HaMelech's baby, cut him in half. Shneor, we're not going to do not this, not that. Shneor, the two lights, and we got them both in one. But really, you could have done a double name. Just it wouldn't have solved the dispute. That's what he wants to say. Interesting. His second answer has much more halachic ramifications. He says like this. Again, the actual answer doesn't really in the depth solve the dispute, but it has halachic ramifications. He says like this. He wanted Meir, and she wanted Yoir. Meir Yoir is Nisht Meya and Nisht Yoy. It's Meya Yoy. He says a double-barreled name becomes a whole new essence. Meya is Meya. Yoy is Yoy. Meya Yoy is a new thing. Like, this is how he explains it, if you want to lomdishly understand it. He says, a mule is born from a horse and a donkey. However, a mule is allowed, you're allowed to help a mule mate with a mule, muleless, whatever have you call it. And you don't say, oh, but they're doing another kilayim, because half a donkey and half a horse, so it's mixing and crossbreeding. No, no, no. A horse and a donkey are two separate things. But a mule is a new chefza. It's a mule. We don't look at it anymore, half-half. So too, a name and a name are two separate things. You put them together, they're a new breed, Meya Yoy. That's his chiddush. But it has halachic ramifications. For instance, my great-grandfather, Rabbi Yidel Gutentag, he was the Gates of Gabba. So by his great-grandson's bris, the very first great-grandson, if you remember, Modcha Bunim Brandeis, my uncle, Oliver Sholem, so he was naming his first child, and the sandik was Yidel Gutentag on his lap. The baby was on his lap. And he called the baby Yehuda Moshe. He called him the same name. She got shocked. He almost dropped. Hello, I'm called Yehuda. So they went to the Manchester Rosh Hashiva, and they asked him, you know, what to do. He said, now that you've called it, Yehuda Moshe is not Yehuda. It's Yehuda Moshe. Okay, so you could argue it's the second name. Some say the vow is, it's a whole new breed. It's Yehuda Moshe, and therefore it's okay, and they left it. They left it. And you have this also by Kala v'chamoyso, and Chosn v'chamoyso, that if it's a double name, then it's a different breed. It's a different thing. That's what he wants to suggest. He also brings by a choyla, Rachmon and Tzlon, sometimes one changes the name. Right? Now, by the way, it's not a simple thing. The Be'er Maharan Chaim says one needs to go to Tzadik.
Add a name.
Very good. It's important to actually what you're saying, yes. So you add a name. Now, the reason is, we want to give him a new chiyus, and a name is the chiyus, is the neshama of a person. Be'er Maharan Chaim says, yes, one has to be careful. Because sometimes, adarabba, his old name is his chiyus, you change the name, he might not have so one has to go to a tzaddik. Reb Zimmerman told me that when Reb Moshe Feinstein was ill, they went to Reb Eliashiv to ask him to change the name. He said, what could be greater than Moshe Ben Feiger? Change the name, he's not anymore Reb Moshe Feinstein. There's no bigger schus than Reb Moshe Feinstein. So not always that's the way. But many times it is. And the question is, asked Reb Nasha Klein, okay, so you change the name. As you mentioned, you didn't change the name, you added to the name. She still has that non-hatzlochadika name. Why do we say, don't mention that name anymore? This is not a problem. Because it's that name with another name on. It's not anymore the old name, it's a new essence. It's a three-er instead of a two-er, or two-er instead of a one-er. It's not anymore that name, it's a new breed of a triple name or whatever it is, and therefore it has a new hatzlocha. I saw another shayla. So we have our halacha not to call a father's name. Now, what happens if you need to call up for an aliyah, your father, and you're the gabba? So some people do yamoid of imoiri. Some people will give the gabbos over to someone else for that moment, which is not poshut. The gabba is a shtela, like Moshe Rabbeinu or whatever, there's mishabur about it. So you know, who said you can, you know, maybe you're the cheft of the gabba, who said? Now, the Avnei Nezer says that the Minigan Ashkenaz, I'm not saying that's the practice, many people do Yamoid of Emori, but the Minigan Ashkenaz is to mention the whole name in an aliyah. There's no shortcuts. And therefore he said, since many hold, if you do a Toya covered beforehand, Rebbe, you're allowed to call your father's name. Plus, if there is no other way of explaining your father's name, then you're allowed to do Rebbe Ploini, even according to Machmirim. So in aliyah and Ashkenaz, you call up by the name. So you're allowed to call up Yamoid Ovi Rebbe Ploini Ben Ploini. I don't know in practice what's done, but I'm just saying that's the psak of the Kosher Klover and Avnei Nezer, I guess. If you're in Ger or somewhere like that, you would be able to do that. Now finally, I saw a fascinating shayla, which I'll leave you with. This shayla is in the Shayla Shetruv, the Torah Lishmo, Simresh Samach Dalet. He says, what happens if your mother is called Mazal Tov? And he says in Baghdad, the minhag was when a woman had a baby, all the people connected to her would walk past and all they'd say is Mazal Tov. It was like a minhag as that. So can you say Mazal Tov to your mother if she's called Mazal Tov? So according to the Chidol that we mentioned earlier, it's not so simple, Abba. Not so simple, but I might say, Paskins, that since you mean a bracha and atzlocha, and you don't mean the name, he allows to say Mazal Tov. So, Shine, that's how it is. May we only be zoicha to good things and lots of Mazal Tovs and be able to share with each other Mazal Tovs, whether you call Mazal Tov or not. Bez Hashem.
Who's the Mazal Tov?